I think we can get started. We have a full committee, a full task force, and that's quite impressive, so thank you all. Good evening. We are here for the 19th meeting of the task force, Municipal Courts Task Force. Let me introduce the folks who are here. To my left, we have Joe Mariana, who is the administrator for Tompkins County and our number one support person and, in a sense, leader in this process. We have on the panel to my left, we have Liz Thomas, who is the superintendent of our supervisor for the town of Ulysses. We have Gwen Wilkinson, who is the district attorney of Tompkins County. We have the Honorable Betty Poole. We have Mark Solomon. We have the Honorable Glenn Galbraith. And we have the Honorable Scott Miller. And we have Jason here someplace. Where'd he go? Oh, all right. And we have Jason Leifer as well. And I'm Ray Schlatter, the chair of this unruly bunch. So we are here today because this is probably one of the most important meetings, second only to the combined public presentations by all of our many speakers, because we are going to be discussing some fairly important issues here today. But before we go on, we do have, with respect to the agenda, the only change that we will make is that the March 30th, 2016 minutes are not available. However, we do have a substitute of sorts, not for the minutes. They will be prepared and they will be circulated, but you do have, I think, a recently circulated memorandum that Judge Galbraith circulated, which has been kind of a running tabulation of the issues and some of the positions, and that's been helpful. That just came out late this afternoon. So if anybody is missing that, I think there are extra copies available, and we'll make sure you have them. So let's go to the public comment portion of the approval of the minutes will be deferred. Public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where if there's anybody from the public who wishes to be heard briefly with respect to any of the issues before the committee, we'd be glad to hear from you at this time. Would anybody like to address the group? All right. No public comment. There's nothing more to report on the chair's report other than to express thanks for all who have made it here today, and I know it's been a very difficult journey for some of you, and I appreciate that you are here and that you have made the contributions that you have been making from the beginning. Joe, staff report?
Only my usual reminder to use your microphones. We do have a video, an audio transcript of this that's really important, so if you'll remember tonight to use your microphones. And that's my full report.
Thanks. So we're going to move to the heart of the meeting at this point, and we had agreed as of the last meeting, and I think Glenn's summary is a useful starting point, but we had agreed that we would be focusing this meeting on the meat of what has become, I would just suggest, at the core of our charge here, and that is the question of whether we should be recommending a district court system, the question of whether we should be recommending some form of a DWI part or a DWI court, perhaps as an alternative to a district court system, and whether we should be recommending some sort of a misdemeanor part, or again, something as an alternative to a district court system. And of course, with respect to any one of these, what the courts would look like, what would be the kind of work that would be entertained, what would be the jurisdiction of these courts, and also with respect to every one of these, is it even possible, and if it is not possible under existing law, what laws would have to be changed in order to get there. So that is pretty much at the heart of what I would like to discuss here today, and I would like to, by the end of this discussion, at least as a group, have either a consensus or at least a clear majority view of what our recommendations would be in any particular aspect of this. So, I open the floor to anybody who would like to address the panel first. Mark.
Ray, as a procedural matter, I know you've replied to Steve Schifrin's email, but I'd like to make sure that, because this discussion may go on, that that matter is addressed. There was, I thought, a clear consensus back a couple, 3 months ago that we would add to our list of recommendations that the law be complied with by every court in the county in respect of the provision to defense counsel of the criminal records of the persons appearing before those courts with counsel, and that somehow fell through the cracks. Unless someone objects, I would just ask that it be added to the list of things that we are certainly going to discuss and I believe recommend.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate, and we certainly can add that since Glenn has been the historian here. If you could just add it to our list of considerations, I think that would, we'll discuss that later. But I think you've accurately recounted that. So let's get back to the other issues. Do we have anybody who would like to start the conversation with some viewpoints?
What the heck, I will.
Go ahead, Gwen. Thank you.
I was hanging back because I haven't been to a meeting in a while, although I have been following the emails and things rather closely. But I do feel a little out of the loop. But at least with respect to the four bullet points that appear on the agenda, I think with respect to the district courts, we still lack fundamental information we need in order to make a decision about whether that's something we should recommend. I know we've had at least one, if not two, law students that were going to do the research to provide us with the information we would need about legislative changes, about the qualifications for a district court judge. There's been some discussion about whether there are even additional quals above and beyond what a city court judge needs for district court. We don't have any of that as far as I can tell from my review of the information that we've been provided. So my sense is that we are not in a position to make a recommendation about a district court because we really don't know what it's going to take to get us there. With respect to the diversion of misdemeanors, my sense is we have a provision in the CPL in Article 175 that enables defense attorneys to make a motion to remove cases from a non-lawyer court to a court presided over by a law-trained judge. And frankly, I think that's sufficient. I don't think there's a defense attorney around that doesn't know about that provision. There certainly shouldn't be. And I think that will protect the interests of defendants, and I think it will allow the court, the cases to proceed smoothly without having to create a whole new forum in order to hear misdemeanors when we have the option. We have a place now where misdemeanors can be heard by a law-trained judge. After a lot of thought, I do support the diversion of DWIs to a centralized court of some kind. I don't know whether there's, I haven't seen any information provided about the logistics and cost of that, but I do know at the county level and in city court, DWIs are in a centralized part, and my anecdotal experience, you know, sitting in the district attorney chair is that things are moving very smoothly, very consistently, and that the cases are moving expeditiously through the system, which I think is due in part to having dedicated court parts. So I do support that and for that reason. And with respect to the intermunicipal consolidations, I'm afraid I don't have an opinion on that yet.
All right, let's do this because I thank you, Gwen, because I appreciate your getting this discussion started. Why don't we take each of those four one at a time and kind of weigh in. And what I'd like to do is start with the DWI part first, because I think that's the piece where there has been the most research completed I believe it also, there appears to be less dispute about it, at least from what I've been able to glean through the many conversations and discussions. Before we get to that, though, I do want to simply comment that I think from the district court, on the district court issue, the pathway is not the only way to get to a district court will be through some kind of legislation. So that being said, and I will be the first to acknowledge that the law student contribution, the research that we were expecting, simply did not materialize. We discussed this at the last meeting, and in a somewhat apologetic sort of way, because what we were hoping and expecting never really was delivered. And so, but that being said, what we did learn from, I think, both Nassau, Suffolk, as well as from our own research that each of us may have done on our own, it's pretty clear that a district court mechanism is going to require, or a district court implementation is going to require some kind of legislation. So we're not taking it off the table, but I just wanted to allow for that. But let's go to the DWI, because I know that Scott has done a fair amount of research on this, and he has some ideas, and I would be interested in hearing that. Scott?
Oh, that's not the, what is that, the light?
That's the light. Light.
I was speaking into the light.
Right.
Don't go toward the lights, Scott.
All right. I'll just...
Take us to the light. All right.
Okay, as everyone knows, I do, I did, I was ordered to by our previous Chief Judge Lippman to create the first DWI part in the city of Ithaca. And although initially opposed to the creation of a DWI part, I am now a convert and would not want to see that broken up and DWI cases go back into the regular criminal docket session. And I've addressed some of those points before, that it's very important with some of the most significant misdemeanor crimes and also the preliminary felony DWI felony jurisdiction we have, it's very important for defendants to see all the different types of defendants that are DWI. It's one of the few crimes where defendants can be so different from one another, yet the crime itself is almost identical. It's one of the few criminal statutes that we have that has such diversity of defendants, but the crime itself is the same. Think about all the other crimes: murder, assaults, forgeries.
Politics.
Every defendant is so different. Every crime is different. But this, there's such a common thread. It's the only crime I've come across where the threat is so common. It's very powerful to have first and second offenders actually look around that courtroom and see 20, 30 other defendants, and also see what happens to other defendants, and not walk away thinking they were treated unfairly or too harshly, that they understand that there was a just result, and maybe a harsh result as far as going to jail, but still a just result. The deterrent effect, both specifically on that individual defendant and the general deterrence, is very powerful to have that done in a DWI part. And if we of the 100 or 150 cases that we've had new DWI cases in the last 24 months, I believe we've had in the city of Ithaca 2 rearrests. That's a really low recidivist rate. It doesn't track the county, obviously, but it's still city of Ithaca residents. The recidivism rate is going down because of that. I definitely now support a DWI part after hearing from all of the parties that have spoken throughout all of these meetings, including town justices, the complexity of DWI cases. DWI cases almost always involve complicated suppression issues that require written decisions after evidentiary hearings. A DWI part, I think, is absolutely necessary. It's consistent with former Chief Judge Lippman's mandate on the county and city courts to create it. So it seems to be it's a contradiction to have town and village courts have one or two or three or five or 10 DWI cases that are just seen throughout the year and not in one part. Why would that rule not apply to town and village courts? Well, it doesn't apply because OCA doesn't want to supervise the town and village courts. That's why it doesn't apply. But the fact is, a DWI part makes sense. How can it be done? The answer is actually fairly simply, it turns out, which is why I can finish speaking on the other points. Because of the countywide and village and townwide referendums and the political realities in place, I'm not in favor of a district court. I'm not in favor of diverting all misdemeanors. I'm not in favor of intermunicipal consolidation. And that has more to do with the not what we should do, but what we can do. And if this group, this committee is going to come out with a recommendation, I would like it to be something that is both something we should do and something that we can do, which is why of the four topics, the one that I believe we should do and can do is misdemeanor DWI court, whereby we would divert all of the village and town DWI cases to a DWI part. How would that work? It does not require a referendum. What it requires is something analogous to the creation of the IDV part, which has been through the courts and challenged. And in fact, the Court of Appeals, only in 2010, in a case, I don't need to give case sites at this point, it'll be in my report, but the Court of Appeals did rule on the constitutionality of setting up these IDV courts. They're almost identical to what we're contemplating with a misdemeanor DWI part. The Court of Appeals, in a case called Correa back in 2010, ruled that the chief administrative judge of New York has the statutory authority to set up various parts. Integrated domestic violence part. There are family treatment courts. The chief administrative judge can set that up. Now, it was challenged. The litigants challenged these IDV courts, claiming that, look, you can't transfer misdemeanor cases from town courts and village courts. If you're going to do that, those cases have to be indicted. Well, the cases aren't indicted. They're simply just transferred by a court order from town and village courts. Betty and Glenn are familiar with this. You get an order from county court, all of a sudden your assault case, your harassment case, your criminal contempt case, you don't have it anymore. There's no indictment. Your misdemeanor case, it's left your court, and it's over in county court. Same thing would apply to DWI misdemeanors. It wouldn't need referendum, but what it would need is the chief administrative judge, after reviewing our report, would have to be convinced to create a administrative rule and regulation for the administration of a unified DWI part. And that's all that would have to be done. And that order would go out to every town and village court, and I guess city court and county court, and all DWI cases in the town and village courts could then be heard in a unified DWI part. Now, it does have to be a superior court judge, so what does that mean? The judge presiding has to be a Supreme Court judge or a county court judge. I guess an acting Supreme, an acting county would be fine as well. It can't be a city court judge, could not be the presiding judge. And so again, it would have to be a Superior Court judge, which is both Supreme and County Court. And that's how IDB Court works. I believe it's, who's the presiding, is it Judge Raleigh? Is IDB? And he's hearing misdemeanor cases.
He's here now. Are you doing IDB these days?
Not anymore. No, it's shared by Judge Rich and Judge Kessler.
All right. So it certainly can be done. And that's how it would be done.
So let me ask, Scott, if you could do that for a DWI part, why can't you do that for all misdemeanors?
Right, okay. Yes, you could. Now, Judge Littman, when he created DWI parts in city and county courts, there was a rationale behind why DWI courts and DWI should be all DWI cases should be heard before the same judge and during the same court session. There is no rationale out there that every misdemeanor, shoplifting, petty larceny, criminal mischief, breaking a car window, should be heard in a unified part. And that would have to be a county court judge. They're just simply, yes, it could be done, but I don't know what, if we're going to recommend something that should be done, it also has to be something that, again, can be done. For a county court judge, such as Judge Raleigh, to be told, Judge Raleigh wants to pretend that he's not even...
I'll respond to the appropriate judge.
For a county court judge like Judge Raleigh to be told, you're now going to be the presiding judge over the every misdemeanor out of the town and village court, it can't be done.
All right, let's talk among ourselves here. He's just watching. All right.
But yes, in theory, it could be done.
All right. Let's
that way as well.
Glenn.
On that last point, first of all, the volume of cases would be massive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
And I think there really is a qualitative difference between DWI, alcohol-related driving offenses, and run-of-the-mill misdemeanor, and I think Scott already referred to that. I mean, it's the same activity that results in everybody getting these DWI cases. The misdemeanors are all over the board. And frankly, a town or village justice is perfectly capable of dealing with those because they're unique. The DWIs are so on the paperwork, and they're so unique in terms of the cause of the person of the violation. They're almost like treatment court kinds of cases. And I think they really require some specialization in dealing with these people on enough numbers that whoever is presiding over them can be effective.
And the potential harm is so astronomical from a DWI compared to a petty larceny or a criminal mischief, the potential harm is also the same in all of those cases.
And I feel similarly as Scott does. I would not want to see the misdemeanors moved out. One, I think is my common phrase is overly toxic. I think you're going to get some real pushback on that. The DWIs, though, I think most of us in the town and village justices, of course, just assume C go away because they are. You can kill 45 minutes in an arraignment or going through a sentencing on that. They just bog us down. And to have that done more efficiently by one court that's dealing with a larger number of people, treating them somewhat uniformly, but also having that special expertise may be necessary to get these people ultimately out of the system and not being recidivating. I'm perfectly happy to see those cases go. Now,
so,
I know that all kind of those justices will agree, but I think more will agree to that segment going up, and I think it would be more effective in dealing with the problem that alcohol and drug
And Glenn, so they wouldn't have to agree. Just to be clear, that they wouldn't have to agree under what appears to be good precedent from the Court of Appeals and the creation of IDV courts. The chief administrative judge could order that part to be created for Tompkins County.
So do we have any opposing views on this issue, the issue of creating a DWI part in the way that Scott has identified?
I don't object. I agree that a DWI part's a good idea, but my agreement should be registered as more of a concurrence than a joining in the majority opinion. I don't agree with the reasons given, but I agree that it should be done.
All right. Mark.
I have a practical question. Where is the, in time and in nature of the charge, where is the line that separates what stays in justice court from what goes to a newly created, if the chief administrative judge agrees, newly created DWI part? What is the line below which the matters stay, and what is the line above which matters go? For example, the initial charge might be a DWAI, which might turn into a DWI, depending upon other, if my memory serves correctly, and vice versa. So what is your thinking, Scott, since you've become the proponent de facto for this proposition? How do you define that line? You've been talking misdemeanor heretofore. You've been speaking about a straight-up DWI charged as a misdemeanor. I assume that's what you meant. Is that the line?
Well, I was actually contemplating any misdemeanor as well as 11921, driving while ability impaired. There's not that much procedural difference on the paperwork. And yet, you're right. And a case may be filed as a non-criminal violation, driving while ability impaired, and a blood test takes 3 or 4 months to come in, and then all of a sudden it's up to misdemeanor driving while intoxicated. A case may be charged as driving while intoxicated and then pled down to driving while ability impaired.
The logic of your advocacy here is the commonality of underlying factual circumstance associated with the charge, wouldn't it make sense to describe this part as one that would hear all charges that are directly related to driving and alcohol, no matter what the severity.
And driving and drugs, 11924.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what you're suggesting. But I thought what you were driving at, Mark, was what about all of the other V&T offenses?
Right,
is it your expectation, Scott, and anybody else, that if there's a failure to keep right in addition to a DWI, that the failure to keep right also goes with this charge? So this county judge is going to be deciding?
Well, all the counts have to go together.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think we need to be clear about that. So all attendant charges, you know, if there's any alcohol involved or any drugs involved and it's driving or it's part of the V&T, then that all goes, is what we're saying.
There's a criminal possession controlled substance 7th because there's cocaine found in the car. That's a good point. That I hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm. I'm not prepared to give an answer.
Give an answer. Yes, it should go to that part.
Yes. Yeah, but it can. The court would have the jurisdiction, so they might
have to. You can't have the cases split up anyway.
And there's a cluster of charges, events, perceptions, biases, beliefs. And it all ought to go, as so redefined, I certainly want to make clear that I support that idea.
I agree with you. Can I give you the numbers?
Yeah, sure.
And that was passed out recently, I think two meetings ago. Keep in mind, countywide, I believe, in the last year, we had about 350 DWIs coming out of the city, town, and village courts. Mm-hmm. City court had... Did we have 100 of them? I think one-third, maybe 30%. So that's a big number of if there's 200 additional cases, that's a lot of cases for this part to hear. So that you're calling me the de facto proponent, but I'm not the de facto volunteer necessarily. I can't volunteer at the Ithaca City Court to do that. That's a different question of where would that happen and where are the resources to do that. That is an incredible volume of DWI cases. And I'm not sure what, it has to be a Superior Court judge. I don't know what kind of hours and I don't believe we have the Superior Court judges right now, County Court and Supreme. I don't believe we have judges to hear it right now. Yeah. Superior Court judges.
Well, I think what would have to happen is, I mean, the only judge or judges who can be appointed as an acting county are city court judges. Is that correct?
That's right.
So it would seem to me, and as I understand it, there already is some borrowing from the city court from time to time. You have been appointed as acting. Judge Rossiter was appointed as acting. It's only a matter of time before Judge Wallace will be appointed as acting. So I would expect that would be part of what would have to happen. But I do think your point is well made. If we're going to go in this direction, then we need to at least in a rough sort of way scope out what the cost is going to be and what the mechanics would be of paying for this. In other words, we can't ignore that. That's got to be part of the argument. I would like to, I guess, because there doesn't appear to be any opposition to this recommendation, and clearly we need to work on some of the details, I'd like to move the discussion now to the more contentious issues of district court or misdemeanor parts, because I think that's something that we really need to discuss, and we need to discuss it because I believe that there is some difference of opinion in this group, and I think we need to get that out there. I'll be glad to go first because I think it's I don't mind being shot at. I think when we began this process, and I am extremely sensitive to the long history of town and village justices who reflect what we call the grassroots justice, and who reflect what I consider to be real, careful, thoughtful, broad-based delivery of justice in so many different contexts. And I think when Glenn was pointing out, for instance, every one of those, whether it's a criminal mischief or an assault or whatever, it's almost unique to the individuals, unique to the circumstances, which also becomes unique to the, I hate to borrow the wine analogy, but unique to the terroir of that particular community. And in that sense, I am extremely supportive of maintaining the justice court system that we had. That being said, the thing that has troubled me as we've taken testimony is the unevenness that appears to be meted out in many of the towns and villages. And I'm not talking about unevenness that derives from the differing judgments of people who are equally trained, but I'm talking about the unevenness that derives from what I would perceive to be some serious deficits in an understanding of the criminal justice system that comes from some of the courts. And that is troubling. And I think that that is something that, go back to our very first presentation, when we had the folks from the Defenders Association here and they're talking about that. We go back to many of the attorneys who presented and some of the concerns that they raised with respect to how people are treated. Go back to so many of the issues that frankly we are going to address in the margins where we are saying we recommend that their bail be issued in amounts that are bailable. In other words, that people can make. We recommend that we get rid of effectively debtors' prisons by turning fines, unpaid fines, into civil judgments. We recommend that people, that there be coordination and that the lawyers be available and that they be accommodated. I mean, there are so many different things that the work of this committee has driven, or certainly has catalyzed, in the sense of trying to eliminate some of this unevenness of justice. But I think in the long run, that, and I'm not sure, it may be a long slog, but I think in the long run, we ought to have a system where misdemeanors are handled through a misdemeanor part of some sort, whether it is one court or two courts, but something that is more clearly defined. I think that we should, both geographically and even-handedly, I guess I would say. And I think that should be, if not a recommendation, it should be an aspiration, because I think that's where we need to be going. And I think that there is a place for the village courts and the town courts, and I think the town and village courts can continue to exist and continue to address the needs of the community at the vehicle and traffic level, at the violation level, at the civil dispute level. That, I think, can be handled, and appropriately so. But I think when it comes to putting people in jail for a year or depriving them of their livelihood as a consequence thereof, or punishing them for not being able to pay a fine and what have you, I think that it is, I think we as a society need to agree that gone are the days when a person removes his own appendix or a person pulls his own tooth. We are at a point now where, frankly, even a person does his own plumbing or even fixes his own car. I think we are reaching the point where there are levels of expertise that we need to rely upon, and where there are levels of training that we need to acknowledge, add value to this society in a useful way. And so that's where I'm going. Please.
I'm reminded of actually Judge Raleigh speaking, and he gave his thoughts on the county village court system pretty strongly. And I agree with what you just said. And when you say gone are the days of doing your own surgery, and gone are the days of a non-lawyer judge ruling on complex evidentiary issues. My concern is that a recommendation of a misdemeanor court, misdemeanor part, that's actually not really the answer to the problem that you've just posed. I guess I want to present another question. If that is your opinion, which I don't disagree with, and I agree with, having practiced in town and village courts, where we've had exceptional ones such as Judge Poole's, and many that are lacking in due process. If we're seeing these problems as this committee, this uneven justice, lay justices that are not qualified to be ruling on cases involving an individual's liberty that could be up to 2 years. Instead of a misdemeanor part, could one of our recommendations be, it is time that once again the town and village court system, at least jurisdiction over criminal cases in the 21st century, be challenged again at both the state and federal level through the courts on whether it violates state and federal due process. Could that be a recommendation from our report, rather than, well, it violates due process, so let's create a misdemeanor part? Isn't it, is now the time to make that recommendation, that it, that needs to be challenged again.
Your recommendation is that they start a lawsuit.
Mark? You and I have discussed this.
Yeah.
And you had suggested that we put this on the record.
If what underlies Ray's comment, which you say you agree with, is a notion that it is a fundamental deprivation of due process of law for defendants' criminal cases, sometimes, to have their cases heard before lay judges, that would seem to me to be ripe for adjudication.
And the answer to that is exactly what has been proposed by Gwen and by Glenn earlier, and that is that, and as you well know, North v. Russell, Supreme Court case, made very clear that as long as there is a system that allows for removal from a non-lawyer-trained judge tribunal to a lawyer-trained judge tribunal, then that system passes constitutional muster. And therefore, that lawsuit will be costly and, in my view, ineffective. Besides, we're not, that's kicking the can into the courts. What I'm suggesting is that we kick the courts into the can. And in other words, that we make recommendations with respect to how they should be reordered in some fashion. I agree with Scott in this sense. Can it be done? Not under the existing system. It would require a huge effort. Should it be done? I'm addressing the should. Whether it will be done, I am smart enough and politically savvy enough to know that that's unlikely. But I think that as a practical matter, if we were talking about what makes the most sense, if we were God and we were recreating our judicial system, what makes the most sense? I'm suggesting that makes the most sense. And I know that it's disappointing to my very dear friend, Betty Poole, and I apologize for that as a person and as a friend. But I've thought about this a lot, and I've struggled with it, and I really believe what I've just said. Jason.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you too, right? But there's also... with the point that Gwen brought up, those motions that defense counsel can make can also be denied. So if we're talking about, on one hand, there's a system we're going to be putting pressure on to make any kind of change. And I think on one hand, you'd need an attorney to make that motion, have the motion denied by the local court, and then appeal that route. Doesn't mean you don't go for pressuring Albany on the other side to do, to consider allowing us to set up a district court here. And the reason why I think that ultimately it's a good idea, because, there's the training issue, I think, comes up and even with the regular misdemeanors, and that we have a lot of defendants, certainly the folks I work with, who have, sometimes severe mental health problems. Those are addressed differently from court to court, justice to justice, counsel to counsel even. And we already have an IDV part. We're talking about creating another DWI part. We had folks in here talking about a mental health part. We already have a vehicle to get some offenders into city drug court when they come out of the town courts. I mean, how many specialized courts are we going to set up before we decide maybe we just need to buck up and have a single criminal district court that handles everything? I mean, maybe even in the future it would handle everything from all the misdemeanors to the felony courts, felony cases, because what we're just talking about is balkanizing the judicial system in the county, just splitting it to different parts. There really should be at the end of this whole process somebody who would, I guess, be almost our chief judge for the county, ensuring that these different parts are run efficiently. When it comes to the we had also talked about earlier in the process, you know, what we're not talking about is taking away the things that the justice courts do well, which are the small claims, which are the landlord-tenant cases, and really even the basic traffic cases. What we're talking about are these things where you might have the, you know, the criminal mischief case driven by somebody on a, you know, a meth-fueled incident one night, but there's no, you say they have no, you know, children or anything like that, so you may not make it to IDV court, but there's still a, you know, a severe drug problem we're dealing with, or somebody who's in one of our assisted living, you know, facilities for people who have, you know, developmental disabilities. The issues wrapped up in their cases between the you know, the victims and the person who gets, you know, arrested as the defendant are not simple. And depending on where that facility is, you might have a different result coming out of one court than another. And it's not, you know, I think that I know certainly, like, if I had a case like that, I'd, you know, having had experience with it in our county court, I'd love to have those cases all brought to county court, because, you know, the county court judges have had, just through the, like, family treatment court, for instance, experience with individuals who have these multiple problems in their lives and their different, you know, resources we can connect them with, even predisposition to see if you can get the, you know, the right kind of outcome that actually helps the community out, and not, which might not be obvious when you first do the arraignment. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, I've done arraignments for some of these folks, and you know, that what happens that first night, you know, even a week later, the landscape changes, and you know, so like a lot of these things we're talking about at the county level with even, you know, sharing services, and I brought this up at the Council of Governments meeting, I think it was our last meeting. All the towns are talking about sharing different types of services, whether it's, you know, public works or back-end services. I mean, as politically toxic as it might be to some folks, we're, you know, maybe it's not going to happen this year or the next, but I really do think it's coming a lot faster than what everyone's prepared for, is a type of consolidation of local services, whether it's courts, highway, clerk, you know, things like that. It's coming because the voters are actually demanding it, whether or not they even recognize it themselves. I hear it every month almost at my town board meetings about people who are tired of paying for a bloated system in New York State. They see elsewhere, and you know, they love living here, but you know, they have relatives who live elsewhere. They're not dealing with multiple layers of government all over the place that do the same exact thing, and simply by—I mean, it's almost like cutting out the middleman when you're going to the store to buy something. I mean, the people are demanding changes, and they just really don't know how to make it happen because they look to Albany and see just a city that thrives on inertia, and unless we really come out of this, you know, with a clear plan on how to make things better, I don't really know what we've been doing for almost a year. And a good way to start, though, is with, you know, maybe taking some of the pressure off the local courts with, you know, the DWI part, because it will even things out. But, you know, if we are going to also continue down this path of talking about mental health courts and such, what we really are talking about is creating a single criminal court for the entire county, whether we realize it or not, and you okay. know, maybe again, maybe it's going to happen in 5 years or 10 years, but that's where we're headed.
Let's get some other viewpoint, Liz.
Well, I'm just, I mean, just from listening to people for all these months, it does seem like I agree with Jason. It does seem like there's recommendations to consolidate. I don't know if it's consolidate, but to have more even justice. And so maybe this more unified court is the way to go. And Glenn, you said, well, we may have more opposition doing that, but I think that The report coming out of here will be something that will stand for some years to come, I would think. And if that's what we feel is the best thing, whether there's opposition or not, I think that's the point of our report, is to say there may be opposition to this, but we feel like this is the best thing. So I don't think we should be afraid to stand up and say that anyway.
Other views, Glenn.
You know, one of the things that was the genesis of this committee being put together in the first place was the hope that there might be actually some cost savings. Now, I know that's morphed a bit into providing more quality of the justice system, but I'm sure that the hope is not that we're going to spend more money. And when we had that meeting with the Nassau County folks, the one thing that impressed me in particular was the incredible increase in costs, anywhere from three-quarters to $1 million a judge in a county our size. That's going to require a couple more full-time judges. And they still had town and village justice courts, or at least the village courts. They had 60-some of them in Nassau County. We're not saving any money at all. All we're doing is creating this huge bureaucracy. We're pulling the courts even further away from the local jurisdictions. And if those advocates that we talk to are examples of why their system works better, it scared the hell out of me when I discovered that instead of having late night arraignments, when somebody gets arrested, they don't call out a judge in the middle of the night and determine whether bail is going to be set or not. They just throw them in a lockup. So just because you're stopped, the police have the power to put you in jail, could be at least overnight. And we don't do that sort of thing here. The town and village justices go out in the middle of the night. We enforce family court warrants in the middle of the night. The district court idea, which in some ways sounded more uniform and simple, when I found out that there really it's just an added layer in the middle, it costs an incredible amount of money, pulls the courts away from people, I was shocked.
Yeah,
I'm adamantly opposed to that now.
And Glenn, I think you are 100%, I think we were all surprised at the morass that we observed. And no offense to our brethren in Nassau County, and I'm grateful that they gave us their time. But the fact is, that system was set up as a child of the 30s, and it brought with it all of the baggage that was present in the system at that time, both political and practical and geographic and technological. I would imagine that what we would do would be a much simpler, cleaner, smarter system than that, and therefore those costs would not be those kinds of costs. I would, in fact, what Jason actually just mentioned suggested something that's even more daring, and that is that we just simply have a criminal court. And the criminal court would be everything from misdemeanors to felonies, period. And it would be the equivalent of our county court, and they would take care of this. And it would be very simple, very clean. Criminal justice then would be meted out in a pretty, certainly in a manner that would comport with due process across the board and evenly, et cetera. That being said, there are other ways, though, to make this a more efficient and less costly proposition. One is to try to drain the system of a lot of the relatively minor quality of life, youthful transgression kinds of claims and cases. And I know Mark is smiling, but the fact is that if we drain the system through a combination of youth court, through a combination of this, I don't know, it's given different names, but it's kind of like a police diversion kind of thing. It allows for young people to be immediately plugged into. They don't even go through the court system. They go immediately into something other than a court system because the judgment of the arresting officers, of the investigating officers, is, no, this kid's 16 years old, this kid's 17 years old, this kid's 19 years old, and this doesn't make sense. So let's just put them right in here. So we drain the system of a lot of that low-hanging fruit that requires some intervention, but it doesn't require the intervention of the criminal justice system. That's one way of making it more efficient. And then, of course, the other is that by being centralized, by being, we realize savings from the combination of the assigned counsel program, not having to travel all over the county to a single judge or a handful of judges handling this in a central location, et cetera. The third way, though, that we handle it is, and I know I keep referring to it as the black box of justice, but there is, I think, an expectation, maybe not yet, but there is in the fullness of time where minor offenses, traffic offenses, could even be small criminal offenses, but minor offenses could be handled in a way that is more consistent with the technology that we live in. You have the district attorney posting online. I was over in Schuyler County the other day and with Barry Porsche, and I've cited him before. He's a DA up in Seneca County. He posts online exactly, he was there as a special prosecutor, but he posts online in Seneca County exactly what is expected with respect to any given number of offenses, whether it's DWI or traffic or what have you. People understand that. And it's built in. It's the black box. They understand that this is what the deal is going to be. They want it. They're given a ticket, an appearance ticket. They simply go online, and they plug in, and they plead guilty or not as they wish. They pay the fine with a credit card as they wish, and life goes on. That's the kind, you know, when we're dealing with the lowest level of offenses where people have violated the law, but they haven't necessarily caused something that is so severe and so grave that they need to be targeted with the, you know, with the scarlet letter for the rest of their life. These are the kinds of conveniences that we need to build into our system, and that hopefully would reduce some of these costs. But anyways, I'm way, way out there at this point. So why don't we get back to the discussion? Anybody? Betty, we have not heard from you, please.
Maybe you don't want to.
No, we do. You have been with us from the beginning.
I guess I have to say I'm a little bit confused and a little bit dismayed. This task force was set up to see if there was a way to save money for the municipalities. And I'm going to read what Joe provided us here. Economy, number one issue, economy. The town and village courts are a minor part of the town and village budgets. It was determined at the first meeting that it would not save that much money. Our charge was to assess the potential to improve efficiency and reduce costs through structural realignment of the justice courts within Tompkins County, provided that such realignments do not diminish the quality of justice. That is a charge. Now we are sitting here and we're talking about possibly spending millions of dollars. Quality, background. Based on an assessment of the qualitative benefits and detriments of the current municipal court structure, our charge is to determine whether specific and cost-effective structural changes would be likely to improve the overall quality of justice within Tompkins County. I'm looking at the words cost effective and reduce costs. Now, all of a sudden, we are sitting here talking about spending more money than I think that this county would be willing to spend.
And I think those are points well made. And I think part of this discussion must address the cost issue. And that's, I think, what Glenn was talking about, that he's right. Nassau County, they had, I'm just speaking off the top of my head, but I think they had 28 judges, and it worked out to, was it 750, or was it maybe even more, $1 million per judge. Mm-hmm. I think it was 750 in the operational costs. That didn't include any of the capital costs per judge.
Also with the county, the sheriff's department.
No, I understand it.
Across the systems, just the court.
No, I understand, but those are legitimate. That's a legitimate concern, and candidly, we need to do those numbers to make sure that if that works. But again, I think the question is, if that works financially, would you? And that's, I guess, my question of you, Betty. If let's say that cost-wise, it would be justified or could be justified to go to a more centralized criminal system, would you support that or not?
No, I would not.
Okay, and can you tell us why?
In every aspect of government, in every aspect of any type of a profession, you're going to have individuals. For instance, let me speak of lawyers, attorneys, okay? There are good attorneys. There are bad attorneys. There are good judges, and there are bad judges. There is recourse. And I just don't understand why, you know, if you have a couple bad apples, and I know it impacts people's lives. I understand that. There are remedies to that available. Now what we want to do, or what we're considering and proposing possibly, is you want to tear the whole thing down and build a whole new one. As opposed to trying to find ways to repair. And in the meantime, taking away from, and maybe defendants would prefer to be before a lay judge.
Some would.
I am adamantly opposed to a district court for the reasons as I stated, cost-wise, and the reasons I just gave.
Yeah. Betty, I want to, the point you made about there is recourse, since this is a Tompkins County committee, and we're not concerned with other counties, that's not our charge, the town and village cases, if there is error that occurs, we are very fortunate that we have lawyer county court judges that take those appeals very seriously. So there, Betty's point is really spot on, that there is recourse in Tompkins County.
Yes.
We choose very good county court judges. We have two excellent ones right now that review appeals from the town and village courts and from city court as well. So mm-hmm. This county does have a very good check on that.
I'm sorry. Glenn, yeah.
I keep harping back to this issue of if, in fact, a defendant wants an attorney justice, he or she can get one. They just haven't been asking for it. I think we're trying to fix a problem that doesn't necessarily exist. The defense attorneys in this county are tough enough to potentially ruffle the feathers of a judge by saying, look, I'd rather go to some other judge than you, and it may be related to the fact that you didn't go to law school. I don't think they're that shy. I think if they think they're going to get a better deal with an attorney justice, they're going to transfer the case, but they just don't do it. And even shifting back to the cost question, even if it costs only $1 more to have a district court, it's going to be $1 more. And it's not going to be $1, it's going to be $750,000 or several million dollars more, because you're still going to have these town and village courts operating at the same time. We're just adding a whole new layer. It just seems to me unrealistic to even focus on it. And my concern is that we're going to go, and in fact, I actually numbered the number of issues we're covering, and I think I'm up to 22 issues that we're considering. We're not going to get a report out of here where we're going to get 22 major changes in our justice system. I think we've got to focus on a few that we really can sell. And the DWI court is one of the ones I think actually might work. If we delude ourselves and our goals too much, I don't think we're going to get anything. I think it's going to be a nice, thick packet of paper sitting on somebody's shelf. And a lot of the discussion about a misdemeanor court or a district court really boils down to the question, are we willing to continue to have non-lawyer judges? And apparently the public is perfectly happy with that because they vote for us. And a lawyer going up against a non-lawyer judge in elections got a big edge over that non-lawyer. But if that non-lawyer can still win, well, maybe the voters know something that, you know, those of us who are sitting around with law degrees haven't quite figured out. Maybe they're perfectly happy with those non-lawyer judges.
Okay, Liz, go ahead.
I was just going back to the resolution that was passed by Tompkins County Council of Governments for our charge. So there is more than cost in there. There's one whereas that says the committee has undertaken such an exploratory review of town and village court system and has concluded that while cost savings are unlikely, recommendations regarding qualitative improvements may result from a rigorous and detailed review, blah, blah, blah. And whereas an efficient and effective justice system is in the interest of TCOG's member municipalities. So, you know, they're asking us to identify potential ways and means to sustain and improve the efficiency and quality of justice. So I think that we are within our charge to, you know, to look at cost and quality. So.
Let me, I just want to be real practical because at the end of the day, we all have to be practical. I'm just, frankly, based on the comments that people are making, it appears that there is a pretty even split on this group of, I mean, even if, whether we couch it in terms of aspirational or, you know, we want it now, it looks as if there are maybe three or four people who would like to move in the direction of a misdemeanor part or, you know, something a little bit more centralized. Long term, it looks as if there are at least three people who are opposed to that, and it looks like there's a couple of people who are maybe in the middle or haven't really clarified. That being said, any kind of if that were the recommendation, in other words, if the recommendation of this group was a 5-4 vote to do this, or a 4-4 split, or a 4-4-2 split, that's not going to have any effect, any practical effect in terms of getting something done. And I'm more interested in getting something done than anything else, if it's conceivable. And so I think what I'd like to do is to talk in terms of that which is doable and that which is aspirational. And I think what I'm asking is if we thought of it in those terms. The DWI part seems to be unanimous. There seems to be, I don't think there's been a dissent here. with respect to setting up. The closest we have to dissent is the district attorney's concurrence, which that's good enough. So we clearly have that. I think that when just from last week's discussion, there are many, many issues that we talked about that where there clearly seemed to be consensus in terms of operational issues, you know, the stuff that I mentioned earlier in terms of bail and fines and, you know, judgments and what have you, and court access and what have you. So we clearly, that stuff can all be kind of brought into this. It seems to me, though, it would be, I think, that if we could just put aside the political, you know, can we do it for a moment, and just find out whether there is an interest in including in the report what I would call the aspirational. Betty, I hear you. I think in your deep dark core, you or deep heart's core, excuse me, to quote the poet, you're simply. You're never going to be able to agree that the local courts should give up misdemeanors. I don't mean to put words in your mouth.
You're absolutely right.
A deep heart's core, that's what the words are. Okay, but I'm wondering about the rest of us. I'm curious whether aspirationally, down the road, can you imagine 10 years from now, 20 years from now, can you imagine there being a more centralized delivery of justice? Can we move the conversation there for a minute just to see where we are? Gwen.
Clarification, Ray. Is your question only can we see a centralized court part, or does your question include can we see requiring that local judges be law trained?
We actually, at the last meeting, and...
That I wasn't at.
No, I know, yeah. You weren't at. No, that's fair. But I think we all agreed that the local courts, and you're asking the question in a different way, but it's the same question. And I think we decided that we took off the table the fact of, I don't know if we took it off the table or not, but I think we were pretty clear that we're, at some level, there is a place for non-lawyer trained judges.
Okay. All right. So.
The question is, at what level is that? And in my view, the level is non-misdemeanor matters, but that's just my view.
Well, I tend to agree with that in principle. My issue is...
Could you use your mic, please?
Oh, sorry, yeah. I said I tend to agree with that in principle, but my issue is we're operating with very little information about what's doable in terms of logistics and finances. We have heard testimony after testimony. We've had the Dunn Commission report. We've had Jonathan Gratis. We've had all those presentations. The arguments in favor of law-trained judges for deciding criminal cases are exceedingly strong, and I think, in fact, incontrovertible, frankly. However, what will it take to create another court part? Can we have a misdemeanor court part that's separate and distinct from, say, a district court? And logistically, where would it be? What would it look like? Because although Liz is dead right that the enabling resolution allows us to consider quality, and in fact, the county administrator's memo of January 22nd of 2015 to TCOG actually expressly strays beyond the strict efficiency-driven charge, we still have to figure out what's doable. We have to figure out what it will take. And we don't know what it will take. We don't have that information. I stand with the people that say to decide a criminal case, you need somebody trained in the law, because the law is what governs those cases, the suppression issues. It's the law applied to the facts. And frankly, when you're talking about a year of somebody's life or a thousand of somebody's dollars or 3 years of probation, you need somebody who's trained in the law to do that now. Just since the 90s, when I was an assistant district attorney, the prosecution of crime has become significantly more complicated, both procedurally and substantively. The kinds of cases we're seeing in the justice courts have changed a lot. We have more serious crimes going into the justice courts. And while I agree there is a place for lay judges, I do believe that law-trained judges are necessary to decide criminal cases. But the reason earlier I invoked the Article 170 removal provision is because I don't know what it will take, and if it's possible, and to use your word, doable, to create the other court part that we've sort of theoretically been talking about. And until we get some of that information, I'm not going to be able to decide.
All right, fair enough. Other views on it? Liz?
At one point, I thought during the last meeting, we had talked about sort of firm and fast decisions that we'd made, that, and those could be part of the recommendations. And then there were, they would not be recommendations. They would be the firm ones. And then there would be sort of the softer ones that we were talking about. So whether we have, if we don't have all the information before we conclude this, it could be that one of the ideas that we put forth is that we, if we do, believe that a court that would handle misdemeanors would be a good thing to look further into and to see what the financing of the whole thing is. I mean, we might be able to leave some of the pieces undone. I don't know. But that could be a further step anyway.
Fine.
The thing is, we have that system right now. Every defendant who appears before a non-lawyer justice can get out of that and get a lawyer justice. It exists. It doesn't cost anything else. It's here now. So, in some ways, if I'm asked, would I rather have a lawyer judge or a non-lawyer judge, in the abstract, all things being equal, I want a lawyer judge. But the fact is, things are never equal. And there are so many non-lawyer judges who are just as good or better than lawyer judges. I want the choice. And right now, a defendant has a choice. If we change the system so that we add all these additional costs and have a separate criminal court, defendants don't have a choice. They're going to get that lawyer judge whether they want him or her or not. This is not a problem. And apparently, virtually no one takes advantage of it now and shifts from a non-lawyer judge to a lawyer judge, even though it's a really fairly simple process. I don't know.
170-25.
I've got it in here someplace, but yeah.
It's not guaranteed.
It's not guaranteed.
The Superior Court can deny the motion,
right.
And then the prosecutor has to proceed by indictment, so we have to involve the grand jury. But it is.
There's a process, and it requires, and the argument is that in order for this to pass constitutional muster, the Superior Court judge must grant the motion. Not all judges agree with that, but that's the argument you make. But the law puts it in the discretion of the Superior Court judge.
That's correct. The statutory language is may, and there is a subsection that addresses explicitly that if the Superior Court judge denies the motion, the proceeding continues in the local justice court.
Exactly. So, all right.
That's why the constitutional challenge. I don't
the mic, Scott.
The Northwest versus Russell case. The 170-25 statute, I remember bringing that motion. So maybe as I think I was 1 or 2 years out practicing. Gwen, you were an ADA back then, showing me the ropes. I was one of the young defense attorneys in Lansing Court to say, hey, I've got a defendant. I'm in front of a lay judge, and my defendant is charged with assaulting the other Lansing Town Justice in the Lansing Town Court.
This doesn't seem right.
So I made the motion to county court. And Judge Barrett denied it. And I was back in Lansing Court.
Right.
So the fact, so.
In much better position than you were before you brought the motion.
Absolutely, both judges hate him now.
So when you say that we have the system, if the statute was amended, maybe that could be one of our recommendations, that statute be amended to get rid of the may
and require a must. Because I disagree that we have the system. Because there are very few county court judges that say, oh yes, please, let me hear another indictment that's a misdemeanor assault. Please, yes, I want to hear that case.
But that is why I made one of the issues sort of a request of the magistrates that they, in fact, would never let it get to that stage, that they would let it go. Now, I know
but the county
no
court judge has to grant the motion is that it stay in county court, I believe, under 170.25, correct?
Yeah, the motion has to be made to Superior Court on notice to the DA.
And that the Superior Court may grant the motion.
Right.
Yeah, but the town or village court could ask to have it moved.
Right, but again, those are discretionary calls. Right. But
maybe,
all right, so we have.
Maybe that's a good way to attack that.
No,
that there's
Scott,
a problem with the statute.
Scott has that. I mean, that's another way to approach this. That they're, you know, to look at it in that way. We are reaching the end of today's session. I think we have agreement on the DWI part. We clearly are, you know, in discussion. There seems to be some pretty clear difference of opinion with respect to setting up something more comprehensive than that. I think it would be interesting for each of us to think about this and try to figure out whether at least we can sign on to some kind of language that would recognize the importance of having the opportunity for misdemeanors to be handled by lawyer-trained judges, either through a change in the state law or aspirationally setting up a more centralized part, either in the sense of a misdemeanor part of county court or something as dramatic as what Jason was referring to, which is basically a county criminal court, period.
Excuse me, Ray.
Yes.
I've tried to be brief today, and I'll try to be brief again. I think you've just mischaracterized the alternatives.
Fair
because
enough.
There is another alternative. If your objection is to the jurisdiction of a non-lawyer judge in a criminal case, there is another alternative, isn't there? And that is the referral from one justice court to another justice court.
That's another alternative.
Okay,
it doesn't. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so if, while we cannot bind justice court judges, if as a matter of policy, education, comity, custom, such applications are never denied, you have eliminated a substantial part of that problem, have you not?
But again, that doesn't guarantee anything. That kind of a recommendation, it's all well and good, and that's the kind of stuff that we're talking about when we're talking about the bail recommendations, when we're talking about the fine recommendations, the civil judgment in lieu of incarceration recommendations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all operational recommendations that frankly depend on the goodwill of the receiving entity, which in this case would be town and village justices. We cannot force any of those courts to do those things. And similarly, we cannot force any of those courts to, as a matter of comity or as a matter of recognition of due process concerns, we cannot force any of them to refer cases to another judge simply because they're a lawyer trained.
Nor can we force the legislature of the state of New York to change the law with respect to the process by which district courts are created.
No, we can't force them, but at least that once those recommendations are received, they can change the law. And once the law is changed, then the problem is fixed, at least to that extent. In any event, we are getting to the end. We still have a fair amount of work to do, and I would like to, if we could just kind of quickly, I'm going to interrupt this at this point because I think there's clearly some thinking and some writing that needs to be finished, but I would like to go to the status of the writing assignments and just kind of quickly figure out who's doing what now. And I know that Gwen has circulated some work that she has been working on. I'm wondering whether, Gwen, you and Liz are, I don't know if you're not at cross purposes, but you may be duplicating.
I noticed that too, that we need to, well, I guess that's going to be in the end. I hope we don't have too many of those things, but that'll be the whoever knits it all together, and you can let me know what you want me to change on mine as well.
We can trim. Not a problem. But
right.
I was a little surprised that the assignment I got was preface, introduction, and charge. And I thought introduction and charge made sense, but in preface, that's where you talk about the scope, the limitation, the range, et cetera, et cetera. And that's where I think you and I might, Liz and I might be duplicating.
I think you are. And why don't the two of you exchange some notes and at this point, and then at the end, I've taken the responsibility to knit everything together. So I will, you know, obviously I'm going to talk, I'll talk to the two of you about that, and we'll figure that out as well. Okay. How about, and then Scott, you are doing the work on the DWI part, right? What else?
I've got the history, and I've got all the pieces. I just have to key it into the computer, but I actually
have it. All right. And who else is Jason?
I have one more related to...
Okay. You.
Everyone else has a digital trail I can follow and come up with one, and Judge Poole's the one who's stealthy among us.
Ah, there you go. Right. Enfield. And then Joe is doing...
the appendix, which is just a compilation of all the materials that have been compiled over the course of this. So it's at this point very thick. It includes a lot of the executive summaries of things like the Dunn Report. I'm not sure that we're going to ultimately want to do that, but it's done to date.
Okay. Oh, good. And then... can we authorize Scott then to include in his section the recommendation piece with respect to the DWI part? So you're doing the research, and let's just kind of include some language that we'll then plug into other parts of the report as well. All right, good. Mark, would you like to jump in on this writing?
Particularly, no.
All right. I will talk to you privately. We'll figure something out. All right, good. Add value.
I'm working on my dissent, Ray.
I know. I think there's going to be a lot of dissents here. This is all right. Concurrences, dissents. Come on, it's going to be a great report. We added value.
Yes, and we knew today was going to be hard, or a lot of discussion. And so even though we may not have moved too much further along, I think we picked the easy ones last time. So I think we did good.
We're doing great. Yeah. Gwen?
Yeah, I agree.
Betty.
Yes, I would just like to say that, and maybe I'm duplicating on what Judge Galbraith said, I think with so many issues that we have on our plate right now, we should pick the ones that are going to be more palatable and concentrate and procedurally think about what needs to be done, as opposed to the enormous God picture. I think if we can have 4 or 5 good issues to be brought before whoever it is the report's going to be brought before, I think it's better than bickering back and forth and wasting a lot of time on one particular issue.
Mark?
Yes, right.
Added value?
I have no idea.
Fair enough. Glenn?
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Jason?
Yeah.
Scott? Yeah, and I the word bickering I would hope, and I've never considered our discussion to be bickering.
No, I said dickering.
Oh, dickering. I'm sorry. That's the problem with my hearing and getting aged.
You do have some exposure to dickering.
I do have a lot of exposure to dickering. I'm very, yes, that's true. Any event, this has been a very important meeting, I think. I think that we have laid out issues that have been kind of simmering, that each has been nurtured in different ways by the information that we've received. And in some of us, it has taken root in different ways than in others. And in any event, it's been a useful discussion. We've added value. And thank you very much. And Gwen, thank you for coming, because I know this has been exceptionally problematic for you over the past many months.